The Menil Collection is a rather unique place. It's an art museum called the Menil Collection, but it's also a campus. It includes a whole area. It's a neighborhood, really, for the arts, and it includes about four or five art buildings. One is the main building, the Menil Collection main building, built by Renzo Piano in 1987, which became a landmark, really, building. It's maybe one of the most successful museums, at least in my opinion, how it treats natural light and, the elegance and the quality of the space and, of course, the quality of the collection. We have a world-class collection of art from ancient periods through, we have a Byzantine collection, a world-class collection of Byzantine icons. We have a very well-known collection of African art, about 1,000 pieces. We have oceanic art. And then we are mostly known for modern and contemporary art. We have the best collection of surrealism in the world outside of Paris, I would say. So it's a whole campus. And Max Neuhaus is the latest artist we commissioned to do a piece for us. I invited Max Neuhaus to do a permanent sound piece just outside of the main entrance of the main museum.
So how did this collaboration with him come about? I read something about the peculiar anecdote of the founder of the collection, Dominique de Menil, meeting Max Neuhaus at a dinner party.
Well, they had known one another before that, but yes, Max Neuhaus knew Christophe de Menil, who was Dominique de Menil's daughter, and who was very interested and engaged with artists, and also supported, I think, Max Neuhaus's work then. So yes, there was a dinner party held by, I think, Christophe. And then apparently Dominique de Menil was so fascinated by what Max Neuhaus told her about his work. And when he said, well, there is a subway, a subway sound installation in Brooklyn we could go to. I mean, it's working right now. She decided to invite the whole party to go there, sort of interrupted the party, rented several limos, and then the whole party went out there to experience the piece. I had no idea, actually, that there was a friendship between Max Neuhaus and Dominique de Menil. I had known and sort of worked and written about Neuhaus when I was still in Bern. I really thought that Ulrich Lok's, introduction of Neuhaus was very important. I was fascinated to discover his work at the Kunsthalle in Bern. And then I was also on the city of Bern on a jury that then decided to commission Neuhaus to do a piece in a public space in Bern, which I was very happy that they were able to convince them to do that. So I had known Neuhaus for quite some time before I came here, but then when I invited him to come here, he told me that he had actually had a friendship with Dominique de Menil, and we found a lot of correspondence between him and Dominique de Menil. So there was a history which made it even more convincing, to continue that dialogue with him.
Can you describe the sound installation that he made for you so we can get an idea?
Yes, it is. It's a space piece. It's a sound sculpture. It's not a timepiece. So he does these sound volumes, which are sort of compact, volumes of sound. Basically, the sound, creates or defines the space, really. And then he has the timepieces, like, I believe Graz maybe is a timepiece. And then, of course, the DR Beacon installation is also a timepiece. And so, but there's also, he did sort of oral garden pieces, which are sort of in between or are also more, I think, space-related pieces. So when he was here, he came here several times, and we looked at, we have some very beautiful interior gardens within the Menil Collection main building, where you can, look from the galleries into a beautiful exotic you know, garden with exotic plants and trees within the building. You know, that's one of the reasons for what our museum is, you know, very well known for. So he first focus on one of these gardens, internal gardens, and then realized that the sound situation was not good. You know, the plants were too dominant, and he couldn't really. It was not interesting enough in terms of opportunities for a sound installation. So he walked on the campus around the building and finally found that sort of cube-like space right before the main entrance. And there he decided to create a sound volume. And he was here several times, experimented and got to know the space, and then created the sound when he was here. And then I was very surprised in the end with the piece, because it was almost like a new type. He called it sound figure because it's less compact and less solid than some of his other well-known sound volumes, where you kind of walk into a sound and then out of the sound volume. Here it's more fluid and it's a more complex piece. So you experience it from sort of, you know, left and right, and it changes when you walk through the piece. The sound experience and perception is changing. I think he was very happy and very proud of the piece that he created for us.
What's the background of the piece in terms of the technical details?
It's always the same, you know. The sound is electronically created. It's like painting with oil, but he uses sound to create the space. You know, he takes sound basically out of time and puts it into a space, which I think is really a fascinating concept. And that is the same with that piece, like for every other piece. Of course, the loudspeakers and all that kind of back material, none of that is visible. So you enter the museum, you may not even realize that you're walking through the piece, because it's very subtle, it's not loud, but you know, when you discover it, you realize there's kind of a beautiful, strange, you know, situation there created by the sound.
And I believe this also explains why he explicitly did not want any recordings of the piece.
Yes, he never wants that, because it's not about music. You know, it's not the piece itself. The place is the piece. So if you record it, it's just absurd. It would be like, you know, scraping the paint from a painting and then say, this is the painting, you know. It wouldn't make any sense. So in his case, yes, he's completely against recording the sound, because the sound is not the piece. The place is the piece, or the sound is only, you know, is made for that specific space. He really redefined, you know, in a way, sculpture. I mean, he invented a new form of art, and I'm very sad, I have to say, that he has left us, that Max died recently. I think he was an outstanding artist, and I think the art world has lost a very significant voice.
Yeah. Can you maybe describe another work that you encountered?
The first timepiece I've ever experienced was at the Kunsthalle in Bern. I knew that this was a temporary piece. I think it was there for about a year or so, maybe 2 years. So I would, of course, go and look at the show. And then at some moment, it was around 1 o'clock, you know, in the middle of the day, this sound started coming from the roof. And it was transformative. It was really an amazing experience. You know, the whole perception of the place where I had been many, many times was transformed by this intervention, by this installation. So I really, from then on, was very much interested in that work. And then the Documenta in Kassel, where he did this piece 3-1, I believe it's called, in a glass building right next to the Friderizianum, that was a great experience. I remember that as one of the best pieces I experienced at that Documenta. It's almost like, you know, Documenta is always very interesting, but it's also very exhausting, because there's so much art and there's so many people, and it's kind of confusing. So I went there several times during the documenta just to sort of purify myself in a way, or to rest my brain and, you know, get sort of re-energized again by this piece, which was just a beautiful experience for me. Yeah, I just think that he is an extraordinary artist. I always remember once I was, you know, when we talked about his piece here, I visited him in Capri when he was still in Capri, and I was in his garden. It was an evening, and he had invited some friends, and then I walked around in his garden a little bit right before dinner, and I walked into this piece. It was a tiny piece, you know, it was like a cube of sound in the middle of this garden. It was like walking into a shower and then leaving it. So, you know, to be able to control sound in terms of space so precisely, I just think that he, you know, he did something that no one has ever achieved before.
I just have one last question. It's regarding the exhibition of drawings that you had at the collection for the inauguration of the installation. I guess some of them are also in your collection now, right?
We keep them on sort of long-term loan. That's what he wanted us. But now we will see, have to see how, you know, how that goes on. I have been interested in his drawings for many, many years. And actually, really, again, Ulrich Lohk showed them in the early 90s, I think, or mid-90s in Bern. And ever since, I've tried to, you know, to convince people, museums especially, to, you know, pay attention to them. I think we had the first exhibition of drawings here in an American museum, and it was about one type of drawings. We decided, Max and I decided to concentrate on what he calls the circumscription drawings. These are the drawings that come after the work. They are always a combination of an image and a text. So it's like a diptych. It's a two-panel drawing. And they usually come after he has finished an important, you know, installation, a work, a sound piece. So they are almost like a mental inventory. If you combine them, if you put them together as a group, they are kind of the history of his work. So I find them very important because it's like a redefined notion of drawing. And therefore, I was just really interested in the way he uses drawing. We did that show last May and had it here through August. It was a small show. We had about 20 pieces, but there are some, you know, some of them are quite large drawings. But it was a beautiful gathering of these works, and in a way they provide, you know, also kind of a history of what he did in the past, because all of his temporary, of course, you know, installations from, you know, the 70s and 80s, they are all gone. But in some cases, the only thing that survives is, are the drawings. So in that case, I find drawings have an important role in his work, and that's what I wanted to concentrate on here with this show.